From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, December 6, 2021.
This Day in Maine is made possible by the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody, serving generations of Maine families and businesses from offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland. And by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare, helping members stay healthy and happy with comprehensive coverage, smart digital health tools, and engaging well-being programs.
Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah says it's a, quote, dark day in Maine as all three hospitalization metrics for COVID-19 have hit new highs. Today, 361 people are in the hospital with COVID-19. 112 patients are receiving critical care and 60 people are on ventilators. All three of those numbers are the highest they've been since the pandemic started. Just 46 critical care beds remain open, according to state data. This week, the Maine Board of Pharmacy will review reports that 13 Walgreens locations around the state have deviated from usual operating hours. Maine residents have been complaining on social media about the national pharmacy chain that it's canceling COVID-19 vaccine appointments. A Walgreens spokesperson said last week some locations are adjusting hours due to staffing issues. Maine law requires that pharmacies be open at least 40 hours per week and to report deviations lasting longer than 4 hours. In addition, more than 4 deviations in a month triggers a review by the Board of Pharmacy. During its meeting on Thursday, the board will also review waivers it issued to 4 Walgreens locations to operate with an emergency pharmacist in charge. Governor Janet Mills says allegations in a federal lawsuit against the parent company of Central Maine Power are, quote, alarming and deeply troubling. In the lawsuit, a cybersecurity expert and CEO of Pennsylvania-based Security Limits, Inc. alleges that Avangrid engaged in bid rigging, racketeering, and buying unnecessary equipment. Avangrid denies those allegations and describes the plaintiff, Paulo Silva, as a disgruntled ex-contractor. On Saturday, the company filed a defamation lawsuit against Silva and Security Limits, Inc. Gasoline prices fell nearly 3 cents a gallon in Maine over the last week. Gas Buddy says the statewide average price fell to $3.43 a gallon. The decline follows a drop in crude prices. Crude prices fell after the discovery of the Omicron variant of coronavirus, which triggered fear that new restrictions would depress travel. Maine's congressional delegation is pushing back against a federal decision to reject a Maine school's application for a college prep program grant. The lawmakers say the U.S. Department of Education shot down University of Maine Farmington's request. They say it's the first time the college prep grant was rejected in more than 20 years. The legislators say the Gear Up program, which helps students prepare for college, now has no funding to continue in Maine. The U.S. Department of Education did not respond to a call seeking comment. Starting today, the Maine Department of Transportation will begin replacing 2 interstate bridges that carry the northbound and southbound sides of I-295 over Route 1 in Yarmouth. DOT Public Information Officer Paul Merrill says crews will maintain 2 lanes of traffic on each side of I-295 during the day, but lane closures could occur at night.
We're embarking on a multi-year project to improve safety and mobility by replacing aging infrastructure bridges, and we're going to do our best to make sure that traffic is able to keep using all lanes throughout the normal daylight and commuting hours.
The project is scheduled to be finished by the end of 2025. Federal grant funding from the U.S. Department of Transportation's Competitive Highway Bridge Program is helping to pay for the $27 million project. A Dutch-owned firm, which is looking to build a $110 million land-based fish farm in Jonesport, has acquired the property and received final permits from the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. The approval of the final DEP permits and the purchase of a 94-acre oceanfront parcel allows Kingfish Maine to proceed with design and engineering plans. The planned Jonesport fish farm is one of 4 large-scale fish farms proposed for Maine's coast. It's the only one that would produce yellowtail, though. The others plan to produce salmon. Meat and poultry processors in Maine are getting a $1.3 million boost from the federal government. U.S. Senators Susan Collins and Angus King say the USDA funds will help the businesses meet packaging, labeling, and food safety requirements. Those grants are distributed to 7 companies across the state. Well, the top official running New England's electricity grid says the region faces a precarious winter in which consumers and businesses might be asked to limit their use of electricity and natural gas to help avert extended brownouts or worse. Gordon Van Wheely, CEO of the Independent System Operator of New England, also says that the region will need more hydroelectricity from Canada to help the transition to a greener grid, whether it gets here via Central Maine Power's contentious energy corridor or by other routes. Fred Bever reports.
With national and international supplies of the natural gas that fuels the majority of New England's power generation disrupted by the pandemic and other issues, Van Wheely says requests for citizens and businesses to reduce energy usage and even forced brownouts are real possibilities this winter.
More vulnerable.
That despite predictions of a relatively mild winter. Extended cold snaps can happen any winter, Van Wheely told reporters during a briefing Monday. He pointed to what Texas learned during its extended outages early this year.
You know, what happened in Texas changed everything. We've not rested well since the February event. We know that we're operating close to the edge here in the wintertime in particular in New England. We've known that for a long time. I think the thing that Texas drove home for me is that the almost 15 million people that live in this region need to understand that we are in a precarious position when it gets into extended extreme weather, particularly cold weather.
New England's grid is more robust than in Texas, he adds, but the reliance on natural gas here can escalate quickly when supply chain issues coincide with a cold snap, because fuel dealers are required to deliver first to homes that heat with gas, and power generators are second in line. This season, ISO New England is planning to issue energy supply advisories along with 21-day weather predictions and may call on the public to curtail use of both electricity and natural gas before a cold snap arrives in order to avert a crisis. ISO System Administrator Peter Brandian says the agency may issue advisories similar to summertime heat wave messaging that comes from utilities.
Turn down your thermostat so that you're not using as much electricity or gas to heat your homes. Don't do as much laundry. Try to minimize the amount of cooking you're doing.
He adds that while business energy use declined some early in the COVID-19 pandemic when workers were sent home en masse, that's no longer the case, with workers at home driving up daytime energy use even while many offices are now open for business as well. In a cold spell, he says,
I don't want to go to Hartford or Boston or something and see all the buildings all lit up at a time that we're asking for conservation.
During the briefing, CEO Van Wheely repeatedly referred to the role that electricity from Canadian hydro dams can play as a kind of battery for the New England grid as it becomes more reliant on other renewable energy such as wind and solar, which, unlike hydroelectricity, are also intermittent depending on when the wind is blowing or sun is shining. That's part of what Massachusetts was seeking, he says, when it contracted for a big slug of electricity from Hydro-Québec. He says he was disappointed that Maine residents voted to kill the CMP power corridor that would bring that electricity into the grid. But if it doesn't survive that and other legal challenges, he says,
I think we'll find other paths. And I think maybe the one thing we're going to have to do is recognize that we're going to have to spend more in order to get these transmission lines sited, because the most part of the objection with the transmission is people don't want to see these lines. And so if you bury them, then you remove that objection, but of course you then incur a much higher price tag on the lines.
Van Wheely notes, though, that there were a number of objections that were very specific to the CMP line. And overall, he adds, Canadian hydro alone can't solve New England's problems, particularly with electricity use expected to grow radically because governments are moving the economy towards decarbonization and increased reliance on renewable electricity. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Well, before smartphones, most people kept in touch using landline telephones. And before direct dialing was common, some calls were handled by switchboard operators. During the 1950s, more than 220,000 operators were employed by the Bell system alone. Most were women who were expected to be courteous, quick-thinking, and patient under pressure. And at a recent reunion in Maine, some former operators shared a few highlights about what they say was a challenging but rewarding job in a simpler time. Susan Sharon has more.
Until the 1970s, a switchboard operator's assistance was often needed for person-to-person collect calls or to report a crime.
Operator, can you get me the police? This is an emergency.
Operators were based at local switching stations called telephone exchanges, where they watched for calls that appeared as lights on a cord board.
Which was a board with little holes for different towns. And when the light came on, that's what we answered.
Shireen Desmond says she would then offer her standard greeting.
Shireen, how may I help you? We had to tell our name.
The caller would then provide a phone number. The operator would plug the caller into the corresponding circuit on the board. And voila, what could possibly go wrong?
Well, one time I plugged into Dixfield. And there was a young boy, and he said the house was on fire.
Lorraine Luce said she had just started as a switchboard operator, and she got so flustered she forgot her training for dealing with an emergency. Fortunately, she says a supervisor was quick to intervene.
There's a certain procedure you have to follow, which completely escaped me, and I hollered fire. And it wasn't long after that that I went into retraining.
Desmond and Luce were among a group of 30 former operators recently swapping stories over lunch at a restaurant in Auburn, Maine. Most of the women are in their 70s and 80s. Some started for the phone company known as Ma Bell right after high school in the 1960s. Back then, there was a strict dress code, no pants and no miniskirts, and everyone was expected to mind their P's and Q's, even when customers did not, like this man, whose call is preserved in the AT&T archives.
That ain't the number.
Well, sir, that's definitely the number.
What?
That is definitely the number.
That ain't the number that I asked you for.
One moment, I'll give you my service assistant.
What the hell is that?
I'll give you my service assistant. One moment, please.
Most customers, the women say, were generally not that rude. They seemed to appreciate having a friendly, helpful voice on the line.
It's a very private call now. You're not going to be listening, are you?
I mean, well, I won't even be on the line, sir, while the number just...
You're going to get off the line as soon as I get the party, right?
Right. There won't be no one on the line.
Okay.
Operators were never supposed to eavesdrop on private calls, but Gail Simpson says occasionally, when things were unusually quiet, they might listen in. She recalls a story that became legendary among her peers. It involved a man using a payphone to call a woman. The operator was supposed to alert him when his first 3 minutes were up.
He had called her and they were having a heated conversation. She was telling him that she was 3 months pregnant, but the operator who initiated their call heard her say that she was 3 months pregnant, and when she went to notify, instead of saying, "Your 3 minutes are up," she said, "Your 3 months are now up," and realized what she had done.
Though they were traditionally underpaid compared to men, Gail Simpson says being a telephone operator was a good option if you didn't have a college degree.
I had 5 children and my insurances covered 99% of all their births and medical care. Life insurance, retirement, pensions, not many companies offer that these days.
Simpson worked for the phone company for 32 years. And while the lights have gone dark on her old cord board, she and others say they have fond memories of the pre-smartphone era, when calling someone was more complicated, but operators were always standing by to offer their personal touch.
I want to talk to my grandma.
Do you have her number?
I don't know what it is.
Okay, you hang up and have your mother help you.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And it's time now to check on the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
The dramatic short-term warming today was confined to the coastal plain, and now a sharp cold front is bearing down upon us and will throw a wall of water at Maine, along with an episode of powerful gusts. Rain will convert to snow showers, ending prior to dawn with a coating to 2 inches north of Bethel, Baxter State Park, and Hodgston, most of all the ski areas. Clouds will scatter out across central and southern counties, low 20s in the mountains, mid-30s in the down east coast by dawn. Our temperatures will trend a bit colder than customary for the rest of this week, and the pattern will be active. Tomorrow, windy and dry, mostly sunny, although some clouds will linger north of mountains where flurries vanish, 23 to 42 north to south.
Wednesday, the critical components for a robust winter storm aren't quite going to align themselves. Skies will be cloudy statewide, with periodic light snow overall but the far north. A couple of inches will accumulate in some locales. Mid-teens north of mountains to near freezing on the coast Cape Elizabeth South. Thursday, partly sunny for the majority with a few mountain flurries, mostly sunny south.
And our next system arrives Friday. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, join us for a discussion on weatherizing your home. I'm Jennifer Mitchell. Thanks for listening.